So this is the last kind of presentation type hour for the workshop, and it's on advanced SDK features. And now, let's see. Yes, so and these are, we call them advanced, and it's interesting because when Beam came out, these features, they weren't available. The features, they came out on the first streaming systems, and so they're kind of lower level than the Beam transforms that we saw earlier. And so when the people doing Beam designed Beam, they thought, oh, we're going to offer a higher level API and we're not going to need these lower level abstractions. But it turned out that they were actually useful, and so they ended up being added to the Beam model. And so particularly when you're working with streaming data, you have data coming into your pipeline, and you have a data point, you sometimes do something to it, and you're done, right? And something that may happen is that you don't want to forget about it, and you want to keep we call it state, some memory of what has happened before. If, for instance, you want to, this is used for Windows, right? So if, let's say that you have a very long window, you want to store the data that comes into that window before you actually output that trigger. And so state is one of the, one of the things that allows you to do that. And so as an example, you can use state to index your data per key. Yes, state is for stored for each key, per each key transform. So you would support Java, you would define a state specification which contains an integer. And so for that key value pair that you're receiving, you just, you're counting an index where you're reading from your state and then output that index, and then you store, the next value. And so by having this, you're able to store in kind of a persistent, inconsistent data storage something that is going on in your pipeline over a long period of time. And so this is what it looks like in Python. So again, you have a state, this object that allows you to access your state, you read it, which, it should contain the current index, and then you output that, the element, and you add one to the index. This turns out to be very useful in streaming pipelines. But so you could think, okay, you can index using group by key, right? So you do a group by key, and then you do a pardo that simply enumerates all of the elements one by one. And this would have the same output as this thing, right? but so I guess interestingly enough is that this should work for a batch pipeline. But if you want this to work for a stream pipeline, you would have to window and add triggers. This will output on a trigger, and you define your triggers and your windows, and you kind of let the runner take care of it. Whereas here you kind of have access to the low level primitive of saying, okay, store this value in our persistent storage, and read it from our persistent storage. So it's kind of like, yeah, the user is under control, and you decide how you do the computation. And so, this is interesting too, because on failures, if you have a bundle and that bundle fails, or your worker dies or whatever, state is consistent, so everything that was not committed to state will not be there when your worker restarts and starts running your bundles again, and everything that was committed will be reliably there. So
it's persistent and consistent for how your pipeline runs. And so there's
multiple kinds of state.
You can store map state where, you know, you could have arbitrarily large, you know, key value pairs, and you want to store them in state and maybe use them later to look up, you know, again, a blacklist or just some kind of map that where your computation matters. Back state where you might want to keep a set of elements, and you can have also a single value state where, you know, you combine it. And so that is pretty interesting, and it's pretty cool. And I think for me, I found that thinking about state and timers has helped me understand streaming much better. Anyway, and so what are timers? So yes, you have state, and you're using it to store some data and use it as you process more data on your streaming pipeline. And so sometimes it's valuable to have a timer. For instance, something very common to use state is, let's say that you want a timer that, you know, will call you back in 5 minutes. And so every time you receive a new element, you can store it in state and just, you know, tell the timer, call me back in 5 minutes. And, you know, this will allow you to store elements until, you know, there's a significant space between the next element that comes. And so you'll output a bundle after you don't have any elements coming in 5 minutes, right? So that's an example of you know, something that you could do. So when an element comes, you buffer the element and you set a timer, and eventually, you know, the timer will trigger and you can output the bundle of elements. And this can be useful if you're, for instance, talking to an external service where, you know, in streaming you have many bundles, and so sometimes you'll have bundles with a single element, right? And if you create a new connection to an external service and send a single element, that might overwhelm your service. And so that's a useful case of using state and timers to buffer data and not overwhelm an external service. And so this is what that code looks like in Java. Here we have the process element call. And so all we do is we buffer the element and we set a timer. And so eventually when there's enough elements that, when there's, it's been long enough that the elements have not come, then we can flush the session. And so we read the buffer and we output all the elements, we clear the buffer and you know, we set, you know, we deactivate the timer. Which is cool. This is what it looks like in Python. Yeah. Questions are reasonable. All right. And so, yeah. So that's one example of using state and timers. And so, some interesting application of state and timers is wintering and triggering can be built on top of state and timers. So if you have a watermark, and so you can have timers that are set on the processing time, so you can say, okay, from whenever you set your timer, you know, within the next whatever x following processing minutes, you'll trigger it again. Or you can set it on event time also. So anyway, the point is, yes, windowing and triggering can be built on top of state and timers. Which is pretty cool. Streaming side inputs can also be built with state and timers. Although for Windmill, which is the streaming backend for Dataflow, it has an extra functionality that offers kind of broadcast state to all of the workers, and it's also very useful for streaming joins. So if you have two streams and you want to join them. And so you have events that correspond to one another, but you don't know which one is going to come first. You would usually put the first one in state And once the second one comes, you actually join them and, you know, clear it up. So yeah, state and timers, very useful. Some of the things that you can do with state and timers you can't do with just windowing and triggering. So definitely a very valuable application of the model. There's also, yeah, and as we saw, there's also fine-grained aggregations. Watermark independent computation, so the people that lift, they sometimes the watermark is too slow for them, so they need to trigger before the watermark actually passes the window. And so they prefer to just have kind of manual control of state and timers to do that. You can also use the duplication and things like that, which is cool. Now, an interesting pitfall of it is that if you don't forget to clean up your state, it'll stay there forever. And so the storage space in your pipeline will just continue to grow. So often it's useful to set a cleanup timer or to do a cleanup after your timer fires, depending on whether your application permits it. It's all interesting stuff. And so, you know, state and timers, they're not that relevant in batch, but they're super useful in streaming. For data flow, you can define a stateful and pardue in batch, and it'll just do everything in memory. But for streaming, you know, all of the runners will commit something to a consistent database, so that if you have any failure, it'll recover and have, you know, consistent state. I think at least Dataflow, the Direct Runner, and Flink Runner support state and timers, so that's pretty cool as well. All right, that's end for state and timers, but I did prepare a little bit more on another feature called Spitable Dufun, which is an interesting new API that we've been working on for a while. But so when we were talking about beam operations, we spoke about these three basic types. But there is actually another type that is very important, which is the read operation. And so, you know, all of these engines, they need to provide a way to connect to a data source and split how you read from that data source and read from multiple threads. And not all data sources support it, but a lot do. So I know we have in Beam a JDBC source that, you know, has to read all of the data in a single thread, which is too bad. But, you know, for, you know, most of the newer advanced databases, Cassandra or DynamoDB or Bigtable, etc., they'll allow you to split how you read from them. And so something that the engines have had to iterate on is how do you read, how do you define a reasonable API to read from storage systems. And something that happened is that we got to a point where we thought, okay, well, the pipeline should normally be, you know, you read something, you transform it, and then you write it somewhere else, right? So it's ETL. And so in the initial design of Beam, there were two different abstractions for sources. One was the bounded source, which is able to split itself by, you know, by a certain fraction. So imagine that you're reading a large file or some database table. You can split that into ranges and read those in parallel, right? So if you had a bounded source that you were writing, you would implement the split call that returns smaller bounded sources that, you know, covered that whole source, and you would also implement a reader that would be able to read through each one of those splits. So that was the bounded source API, and there was an unbounded source API that also had splits, a split call. And what the split call there would do is it would split, but by key. And so it would say, okay, well, I'm I'm supposed to read from this pops up topic. I'll read elements with keys, you know, 0 to, you know, half of the range of all keys. And then, you know, I'll split another, the other half of the ranges. And so these two abstractions, they covered a little bit different use cases. So the unbounded source allowed you to calculate the watermark, the checkpointing of your streaming data being read, and, you know, have a backlog, keep track of a backlog. Whereas the bounded source allow you to, you know, also do splitting, but mostly track the fraction that you've consumed of the batch data source. And so, and you know, this was fine. We have a lot of sources in Beam that are written this way. But eventually, we started seeing that the I/O connectors, yes, many of them implement one of these interfaces, but they're actually pretty complex transforms. Let me see. Let me skip to this. So, for instance, this is how we read from data store. We create a user query, and then we split that query into different, you know, subqueries that can be run in parallel. We reshuffle those queries to multiple workers, and then we actually read from data store. Right? Now, there's more complex ones. This is to write to files, and we have a very complex transform to Google. What is this? Write to the query. What is it? Yes, so this is write to the query, and so it does a whole bunch of things you know, and this is just to say that the reading from a data source is also a data transformation. But the problem with these abstractions that I had shown you is that they had a few shortcomings. One is that they always have to be at the beginning of a pipeline. They're just completely different from any other Pardue or, you know, pipeline transformation. They also can't receive side inputs or wait for something to happen in the pipeline. So they're they make sense for some data for most data sources, in fact. But there's some awkward scenarios where, say, for instance, you have you're receiving files in a bucket in S3 or in Google Cloud Storage, and every time you receive a file, you input an event into PubSub. Then you would read that event from PubSub, and then you would you would parse that file in a Pardue, and maybe if the file is too large, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. You have to read it in a single thread, and so, you know, because this Pardue receives the file name, it can't be at the beginning of a pipeline. It is kind of a receive. It's a transform that receives a file name. So it couldn't be written with these sources that allows you to split how you read it. So then we came up with came up with the idea of trying to bring this into the Dufon and the Pardue API, and so. When you think about reading an Avro file, what you want to do is read the Avro file over, you know, its range, and so you're able to split this Avro file into different ranges that cover its full range, and so you can parallelize that, which is again similar to what the bounded source does, but so. The idea is that in the new API, we're going to have an element and a restriction, and this restriction kind of allows you to split the element into multiple parts to be read. And so, for instance, reading from Kafka, you would read some Kafka topic from, you know, the beginning of a range until, you know, infinity, because this is a
the streaming topic. And so you can split that into a sub-range from 100 to 150, and then kind of give back to the runner this residual range
that you can schedule in a different worker or later on to be read. I missed adding the implementation. But so basically, what the runner would do initially. Let me see if I have. I didn't complete to show what the API looks like. I'll show you in a bit. But so, let me see if I have it right here. All right, like we can look at this one. All right. So this is a normal beam do fun where it has a process element call, but it also has an extra argument that is not just context, but it's also an offset tracker. And so let's say that this element might represent an Avro file. And so you can run through the Avro file and you can implement this offset tracker to track what is the range of that Avro file that you want to consume. And so in this case it's whatever, from 0 to the end of the file. And so I guess the point of this is that instead of writing a different kind of source API for streaming and for batch, you would just simply adopt this splittable do fun, which is what the API is called, and you would be able to reuse that in a pipeline that reads in a streaming pipeline or in a batch pipeline, and so you wouldn't have to repeat a bunch of code. This is the Avro reader example, so your tracker knows what is the range that you're supposed to read in that file, and so you would go over it until you go over that range, and then you can finish that file's context, and the rest of the range of the file can be read in a different worker, and so it requires some runner integration. But so initially, all you would need to do is your entrance element, get a restriction with all the full range that you want to read, and then split that range into multiple ranges that you can schedule from multiple workers. And so that would be a way to have, to have a single API to define a parallel reader of data. And so once the engines have this basic support, they can also have more complex support where they, if you have a straggler worker, you can tell the worker, okay, you have to stop processing what you're processing at the moment and just give a residual of what you haven't processed to be scheduled in a different worker, which is pretty cool. And so that's it for the advanced features of Beam. I think that's all we had in terms of presentations. So now if there's any questions or if you want to look at your pipelines or whatever. Oh, thank you.